Before we get started on the Bengals Beat podcast, I wanted to let you know that we are now brought to you by 50 West Brewery. They have award-winning beers coupled with a bike shop, canoe and kayak livery, volleyball leagues, running groups, and a killer food menu. At 50 West, they pride themselves on adding value to people's lives through beer. Is there a better way to add value to people's lives than through beer? Whether you're looking to take a float down the river and end with a beer or throw back a couple and play some volleyball, 50 West is unlike any other brewery you've ever seen. Check out their website at 50westbrew.com. That's F-I-F-T-Y, westbrew.com for more information. 50 West, where every beer's a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewery. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals Beat writers, Jim Osarski and Paul Weiner Jr., invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out insider news, listen in on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. You can subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, or your preferred podcast platform. Of course, you can always listen in the podcast section of our Cincinnati.com Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. It's the Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewing Company. As always, Paul Danner Jr. here with Jim Osarski. We're in the middle of the off season. I think we're both in sort of a little bit of blur of vacations and this series and trying to figure out what's going on. So we're back. We're centered here for this podcast for everybody.
Yeah, it's the final countdown, if you will, to the start of training camp, which it does. It just seems, you know, not that long ago that mini camp was ending. But thankfully we don't have to talk about Tyler Eifert's practice habits just yet. I'm enjoying that.
Although plenty of off-season nuggets in BX the last few weeks. Yeah. You've been dropping the nuggets in on BX about talking about Cedric Ogbuehi, he's transitioned to right tackle, and the Tyler Croft contract situation this past Sunday. So if you haven't seen that, make sure you check out Cincinnati.com. You talked to Eric Ball about bees.
Yeah.
Go figure. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Who'd have thought that there's a beekeeper at Paul Brown Stadium? It was real fun. Meg Vogel and I went out to I didn't write this in the piece, but I'll give it to our BBP listeners. He actually keeps his bees at Mike Zimmer's ranch in northern Kentucky.
What a great nugget that is. And, that's just incredible.
And needless to say, Eric had to do some convincing. Mike was not about having hives of bees. Next,
I'm trying to envision an angry Mike Zimmer with bees swarming all around him.
Right.
It's something that I really wish that we could all have on video.
So yeah, it was fun and Eric was great. So yeah, definitely check out Meg Vogel's video on that in the pictures. And I can attest that honey that Eric Ball got into this for is top notch, Paul. He did give
you've had the honey. You've sampled the honey.
I have. It is not like anything you get from the. I've never had raw, unprocessed honey. I mean, he processes it a little bit, like to make it edible, but obviously it's not like a store. You know what I mean? So it's about as like natural as you can get. So it definitely tastes different, but it is really good.
Eric Ball here for all your honey right? needs. It's such a perfect off-season story. It was fun. It was just everything about it is great. I highly recommend anybody going to the site, checking it out, giving it a watch. Meg Vogel's video and your story. Good quality off-season nuggetry.
Yeah.
I will say for those. So we've been doing this series, and that's kind of been the big thing. We've been doing this top five Bengals plays of the last 30 years, and you know, we're counting down what's coming out. We'll be unveiling basically on this podcast what number two is, and there'll be story and video coming out with that very soon after this podcast drops. we're really trying to capture the essence of the individual play and what it meant, but that meant categorizing. And I think that's the most interesting part, is because we're going to talk through the 5-4-3-2-1. Well, not the one. We're going to leave one hanging out there. We can't totally give it away, right, but I'm guessing a lot of you will be able to, you know, to piece it together. But the 5-4-3-2, we're going to talk through the behind-the-scenes stories, who we talked to, interesting things from those conversations. And then we're going to go through the others, the honorable mentions, kind of who we had in the 6 to 10 area from the last 30 years. It's an interesting period in Bengals history. It sort of connects the last time they were good with a whole lot of years when they won't, right, and then the Marvin Lewis era of they're good but not great. And so finding individual instances of brilliance was kind of a fun thing, because you're not immediately drawn necessarily like, oh, well, you have to go to this season or that game. You had to kind of work a little harder to find those.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was. It was a lot of fun kind of going through this and even starting with number five, Paul. You know, people look, well, a little background. This was not just Paul and I kind of going through this and picking things willy-nilly. I mean, thank you to all of you BBP listeners who found us on various forms of the internet, whether it be Reddit, Facebook groups, message boards, or even just sort of sending us your ideas of this over, what, the last year, Paul, that yeah, you kind of came up with this idea of what stuck out to you in this time period. And that was the fun part, was the individual play aspect of it. And I think there was no maybe better example of that, Paul, than number five, which was right in the heart of the lost decade. I mean, yeah, who would have ever thought that, I didn't personally, that Jeff Blake 84Z up to Darnay Scott would have just resonated the way it did for a lot of people over many years. I mean, heck, you know, there's obviously YouTube compilations to that deep ball and just sort of what that meant for people as a specific play. And you're right. It kind of, who would have thought that, you know, people would have picked what they did. And obviously that kind of fit more into, you know, the entertainment and sort of the memorable part of it, as opposed to some of our other categories, which, you know, the impossibility of it, the impact of it, whether it just be in the game or even on the league, as some of these other ones were. But yeah, it was pretty cool. It was a fun thing to go through, especially even for someone like myself to go back through different parts of this Bengals history.
Yeah, that's how we had to break it down, was, you know, memorable, impactful, entertaining, and the impossibility. Those were your four equally divided 25% criteria that gives you the true essence of what one play can mean. And I think Blake, when you got into Blake, I mean, you're right, it was about memorable and impactful, because there was some entertaining and a possibility to, right, actually the sports science of how he did it, but it had an impact in that it ushered in the Shaken Blake era, which was the one blip of like making anyone feel good about themselves in the 90s when it came to Bengals football. You know, there was this one thing where all of a sudden, with Darnay Scott and Carl Pickens and Jeff Blake, the Bengals had a thing, right, and it started against the Dallas Cowboys in the mid-90s, one of the greatest dynasties, right, in NFL history. They came to town, and this unknown quarterback is just dropping deep dimes. And it's like the Bengals have a personality, and the Bengals are fun again. And there's this thing, and it lasts for years.
Right.
You know, the Jeff Blake thing, while it ended up fizzling out, lasted for a long time. And it, you know, you give people a chance to remember and feel good about themselves in that era. And yeah, people are going to remember it because there wasn't much else to remember.
Right. And that, you know, that's the biggest takeaway too, Paul, was, you know, those guys didn't shy away from it. I mean, Jeff Blake said, he's like, look, you know, we didn't win a whole lot. We didn't do a whole lot well. I mean, Tim McGee, a wide receiver on that team, said the same thing. But they, you know, as years have gone on, whatever they felt at the time or just after, and we could get into some bitterness regarding some of these guys maybe down the line as we run through the list. These guys like the fact that they're remembered for something positive and doing something fun. I mean, they don't hide from the bad results, but you know, you're right. It was a thing, and you know, they were part of it.
Yeah, exactly. And so that ended up landing at number five for us. And you know, great. You can go back. All these are linked in the series, so you can go in and at the top it links back to the previous 5, 4, 3, 2, and eventually the one. If you want to go back and watch that video, it was a fun video by Mike Nyerges, sort of diving into the sports science of the Jeff Blake right. deep ball and what that meant. So I just good stuff there. That was number five. So number four, we got into the Giovanni Bernard 35-yard run in Miami back in 2013. And that sort of hit a little bit differently, where the entertainment value was on full blast on this one. I mean, you know, to have a run like that where you're going sideline to sideline, you're making people miss, your quarterback's out in front, you're cutting back, you're making the same guy whiff on you twice, you spin into the end zone on Thursday Night Football. It was as entertaining as it gets. There was an impossibility factor. People do remember that, but not as much as they remembered a lot of other things on this list. It wasn't as impactful, but the entertainment value and the impossibility of it was really what ended up carrying it into the top five. Otherwise, it would not have made it.
Right.
But, you know, when you really looked at it, you know, what people said, that's, I think, what put it up there. But what was interesting for me, talking to Gio about this, was, and Gio, you know, for background on him, if you listen to BBP, you've heard him. He's been on BTS with us before. You've heard interviews with him before. He's as unique, charismatic, interesting, fun of a guy as you will meet. I mean, he's just one of the more interesting athletes in this league. But he's not going to be like, oh, I want to talk about myself more.
Right.
Which, you'd be surprised, we mostly get that.
Right.
Maybe you wouldn't be surprised. Most guys are just kind of happy talking about themselves and they're comfortable there. Gio's kind of the opposite that way. So for him to talk about himself in that fact, I don't know that was necessarily his wheelhouse as far as something he was interested in, but it was important to him. He's from the Miami area. You know, his friends and family all were down there, and it was his first game playing in front of his hometown friends yeah. and family back in Miami as a pro. And to do that, and you know, he kind of tells the story about seeing his family, even though they lost, Cam Wake had a walk-off sack in that game, which Andy Dalton still debates whether or not that actually should have been a safety.
Right.
but you know, when you telling that story about seeing his friends and family after the game, after he did that, knowing that he had done that, it was just that's kind of what left a special place in his heart. And I think it's always interesting you hear from guys to why something mattered to them. Now to us differently, but to them, I thought that was cool.
I personally go see the video again. These are all up. I mean, you know, AJ was supposed to block. Tyler was supposed to block. I mean, the reason this whole thing was great was he kind of had to admit that like half the guys didn't do their job. Which is what made it a great individual play. You know, he gave Clint Bowling some love for getting around there, and of course the quarterback too. But from the play perspective, Paul, like it was just it. You know, you hear the term, "Oh, you hit the L button, truck stick, joystick, all that stuff." This is definitely one of those just fun, like actual video game type plays. That it happens in the NFL. It happens. I mean, you can maybe argue on a semi-weekly basis, depending on the team, if you put all the plays together. But, I mean, this one resonated for sure, the whole back and forth and bouncing off guys. And, you know, it was a lot of fun.
I really enjoyed when I brought up to him the fact that it looked like the Dolphins players out in front, where it was Jermaine Gresham and Mosunu and Andy Dalton were leading the way, the convoy down the left side, when he had eventually cut it back over. It looked like they just quit, and he was like, oh, yeah, they quit. Oh, yeah, look at them. They totally quit. Like, they were just walking backwards almost, and he's like, yeah, you know. But he said that's kind of what happens, and that's what why plays like these can be special. Right. Like, you can literally feel guys giving up because they're tired. It's a long play. They're getting chased all over the place. Like, that momentum shift is what has to happen on a play like that for something to be successful, is to basically demoralize the opponent. And that's kind of what happened there.
Yeah.
And to cut back and beat Brent Grimes a second time. And, you know, Brent Grimes is kind of a personality. I don't know anything about Gio's relationship with Brent Grimes, but he sort of like did kind of smile and wink a little bit when he was like, yeah, I think I heard that name a couple times. Anyway, just that was a fun play and fun to talk to Gio and Andy about it, because they were having interesting recollections of it. You know, a lot of, man, it's just you don't even believe it until it happens. Gio not super thrilled with his front flip at the end, though.
No.
He did not. Unlike other people who have attempted front flips on this countdown, he did not think it was that great, but it was a fun end to that play. So anyway, a really interesting play and one that I think a lot of Bengals fans won't forget anytime soon. That play, that game is still one of my favorites, even though the Bengals lost. There was so much in that game.
Yeah.
There was the walk-off sack by Cam Wake was something else. There was tons of Carlos Dunlap had an incredible chase down the field of a Miami player and stripped from behind. It was one of those vintage Carlos Dunlap. He was in the middle of, I think he forced four fumbles in like an 8-game stretch or something like that, where he was just ripping on people from behind, and he chased this guy all the way down the field. I'll never forget that. There was a phantom block in the back call on Jermaine Gresham that would have been a huge Marvin Jones long catch and run touchdown. It was just a game that was super entertaining, had everything, and then the Bengals took the L, like many on this countdown.
Yeah. And that's that is something we've heard. How come all these come and loss? Well, it really wasn't about how good the year was, winning or losing a game. It was about that individual sort of accomplishment. But you're right. It's you know, in terms of this particular, I mean, heck, right? This was the Geno game. This is the reason why Geno doesn't speak.
So it's the reason why Geno doesn't speak.
I mean, we didn't have time to get into all that, but it was, you know, that might be actually the most important thing that came out of that one. But
yeah, I mean, and not to riff onto a tangent here, but you know, that's why when I hear things and coaches and teams complaining about the injuries they get in a season, I tell them to shut up and watch the 2013 Bengals. That defense, Mike Zimmer got that defense playing better after Geno went down. Admittedly, obviously missing so many things, but that defense was playing better the last half of the season after Geno, who was having a great year, went down. And they almost were before, and they had tons of injuries that year and never really let it bog. They found ways to stay a great defense and make the system work for them. And it's like, look, anytime anybody complains, oh, I didn't have this guy, I didn't have that guy, you've got to find ways to make it work. That's what the NFL is all about. And that season was a perfect example after that Miami game, how good that defense stayed despite losing a guy like Geno, who was the center of everything they did. Anyway, side tangent, things that make me mad, but let's move on. So this is an interesting backstory to number three. I think this was one of the most memorable plays, specifically for what became a new generation of Bengals fan. You know, the Marvin Lewis era Bengals fan, there's lots of them that – the 05 season, you know, all that people most remember, what maybe the play most remembered and the game most remembered by that era was probably the game that grabbed most of them, which was when Kansas City came to Cincinnati at 9-0 and Chad guaranteed a win and Peter Warrick backed up his talk, and it was the Peter Warrick game. And I you can speak to this too, what we saw I saw more people talking about that play, about being their memory of becoming a Bengals fan or becoming a Bengals fan again than almost anything else on the list.
Yeah, and that's, I think, where this one was more impactful, because unlike the deep ball, and while it was a fairly simple pattern, and unlike the sort of individual effort of Geo, like, when you watch that, it wasn't particularly amazing. Like, I mean, it was really well blocked. But he only had to shake one arm tackle, I want to say.
Yes.
So this one, I think, Paul, fit that, like, what you just said. This was one of the greatest plays in the last 30 years because of what it meant and what it, you know, starting with the Chad Johnson guarantee at the start of, you know, the a week before, to, I think, that wasn't that a Marvin Lewis mic'd up week where I think video came out and what that meant after and sort of, I remember seeing some post game video there or whatever. I mean, obviously the undefeated Chiefs at that point. No, you're right. I think this one fit all of the categories, but you're right. I think this one for sure resonated with people because of it was the end. I mean, we're talking about Jeff Blake to start this list. It was the end of that.
It was official. Darren Simmons, he said it was justification for everything we'd been doing. I mean, that team started like every other team that you see in the lost decade. They started, they lost 3 of 4, and it was same old Bengals, even though they got a new coach. And then they started winning. And they started winning impressively. And they were doing it at home. But there was still a yeah, but they hadn't really made themselves totally relevant. There were still a lot of doubts because they hadn't done anything huge. And then here came the Chiefs. You know, they were – Dante Hall was going to break all kinds of records. They had Trent Green and Tony Gonzalez. And they had a huge – they had a big offense that year. And the Bengals beat them. And they beat them on every level of the game. And the two biggest plays were Peter Warwick, his 68-yard punt return, and then he had a 77-yard bomb he caught to put it away, both of those coming in the fourth quarter. So the interesting element of this to me as we do the story was what you maybe noticed if you watched the video or read the story was one person's voice noticeably absent, and that was Peter Warwick, who – I, you know, spent a long time attempting to get in contact with and did get in contact with, and he was kind of blowing us off and not really interested. And we finally, you know, through him and his representation, we're like, hey, it's not like this was going to be some hit piece. Like, we're just trying to talk about this play and that time. He declined interview. He didn't want to talk about it. And I always find that interesting. Yeah. Like, what grudge? What? And we don't know. We don't know why. It could be any number of reasons. But you wonder, like, what grudge, you know, 15 years later are you still harboring where you're uninterested in talking about your greatest game as a pro? Now, Peter Warwick, Darren Simmons said another thing when I talked to him. When I mentioned him not necessarily living up to expectations, he said it wasn't his fault he got drafted 4th overall. Yeah. And that's with a lot of these guys. And we talk about this a lot with John Ross.
Exactly.
And that is, it's not their fault where they get drafted that their expectations are so ungodly high. And Peter Warwick was kind of a victim of that. He had an okay career. He was a fine player. He didn't translate to being the type of playmaker that you would expect at number 4 overall, but that's not his fault that that's where he got picked and maybe overdrafted a little bit. But this was his day. I always want, like, why? Guys got to let stuff go, man. You just got to.
Or
you enjoy the big moment.
Or you can just be like Michael Jordan and hold on to it, and then when you're inducted into the Hall of Fame, just lay waste to everyone.
Call out the haters.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, who knows? These guys are all – I mean, to get to that level, you know, they hold on to stuff for weird reasons. And sometimes – I don't think – you know, some guys I don't think ever find peace with some things. Like, you know, when we were trying to do the Bengals 50 stuff last year, Paul, and I want to say even – before that, like David Klingler's a guy. Klingler, you know, he'll promote that he played in the NFL and for the Bengals, but you don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know?
No.
So I don't know.
Warrick was so maligned, and there was, you know, he had like problems seeing, right? And it was like he dropped in a lot of balls and fumbled, and he was fired as the punt returner the year before.
Yeah.
They put TJ back there. I mean, Peter Warrick, if anything, he was supposed to be in the NFL, it was a punt returner. And he lost that job. And Darren Simmons, credit to him, when he came in, helped to get Peter Warrick's confidence back and helped him turn into a guy that had a number of big returns that year, but none bigger than the one that he had in this game. And to do it opposite of Dante Hall, who was the all-everything greatest season ever by a returner, was kind of a special thing too. And it really did. The bottom line is this was the stat that I was able to find and that I knew, but until you see it, I went back and I was reading through the Bengals media guide of recap of the 03 season, and they point out that that Chiefs game was the first of 57 consecutive sellouts at Paul Brown Stadium, to take you back to what the relationship was like between the fans and the team, or otherwise known as the opposite of what it is now. You know, where – and – we should probably have a meter like that just dings every time that I talk about this, because I do talk about it too often and people get sick of hearing about it. These moments are what creates rabid fan bases.
Yeah.
People that don't want to miss a game because that moment was so incredible at that game that say they were there. That's what the reaction on Twitter when the Warrick story came out last week was, so many people being like, oh my God, I was there. I will never forget it. Being at that game, it made me so thrilled to be a Bengals fan and love the team.
Yeah.
Because that was the most amazing moment. And it's like, we haven't had many of those, or they'd be on this list. Because have not been many of those, particularly in the last few years, and that's why they're at where they're at. But I'm not going to go down that wormhole again. I promise I'm going to try to not continue to pound that dead horse. I'm just going to let it – I'm going to let it go. I'm going to let
it go. Well, at least for this week.
Yeah. Well, dude, you don't think I'm going to be talking about this as soon as training camp starts back up? At Mock Turtle Soup on Tuesday the 24th, you don't think I'm going to be asking Mike Brown about needing a moment to connect with the fans again? I mean, the fans are one of the biggest storylines on this team. Yeah. From a writing perspective, where they're at with their fan base, trying to win them back because they did a very unlikable thing to start the offseason, is a huge storyline for this franchise right now. They need to reconnect. And they can do it by winning, and they've doubled down on saying they're going to do it by winning, but then they have to win or else what?
Right?
So it's a huge storyline, and so you will get sick of hearing about it. I will continue to mention the word moment. Go ahead and put a you know, a counter on how many times I mention it. Let's go to number two. Speaking of things you can't believe you saw, and this was one I think everybody knew would be on this countdown, and that was Jerome Simpson versus Arizona in 2011.
Yeah.
The flip, the unbelievable, impossible, entertaining flip.
Yeah. You know, so if you're listening to this, it's a little sneak preview just for you. This story will be out in just a few days, if you're listening to this live early in the week. But yeah, it's, I mean, 2011, I'm struggling to find the words because it's one of those things, you see it so often still. It's probably the one, not probably, I mean, it's the Bengals play, right? I mean, it's 2018, but you could watch any highlight package, any sort of network intro, and you see Jerome Simpson flipping. Like, it's just, it's that play. It's so ridiculous. It's Andy Dalton, you know, here Andy's like, who even does that? Who even thinks about it? And Jerome admitted, I wasn't thinking.
Yeah.
Which is probably the only way that something like that could happen. And we got some fun stuff for you there with just like how just the science of that and the anatomy, like quite literally the anatomy of it. Shout out to Xavier University and their gymnastics club. little teaser there for you guys. But yeah, Paul, I mean, it was, it, you know, that's the one. It's funny because that was one of their last wins in 2011. They had to, yeah. It was kind of like a win in your end scenario after that, and they kind of needed some help down the line. But I mean, definitely the shining moment in Jerome Simpson's life and career. And it's something now he's still, you know, taking advantage of, I guess is the word to use. I mean, he held his first camp back in his hometown and used the flip on his sort of like camp flyers and stuff. I mean, it's just sort of that,
of course,
that thing, which is just, yeah, I rack my brain, Paul, you know, just odd, strange. Like, what else even fits with that? Like, Gary Oyepremian trying to throw the ball? Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a blooper.
Here's what I always talk about anytime anybody asks me about that play. Because I was covering the Bengals then. I was covering them for CBS Sports. And the one thing I remember watching it and talking to him afterwards was that that was the most Jerome Simpson play of all time, because it was everything that was encapsulated Jerome Simpson, good and bad. It was – now, did we get – I was told by people in the Bengals organization that he ran the wrong route. Did we get that confirmed?
No one – ran the wrong route. Andy didn't seem to think so, and Andy was the one who called the play and ran it. So Andy – when I asked Andy that, he kind of looked at me like I was an idiot for saying it.
there's thought out there that he potentially ran the wrong route. So we don't know. Maybe he did run the right one. We can't kind of confirm that. But it was in order to score in that situation, the one small step to the right and reaching the ball right would have done the trick. And there was no need to do anything like jeopardizing life, limb, and football in order to try to score that. But that wasn't Jerome Simpson's calling card, being like the savvy, intelligent player on the field. He was the athlete. And so he went and did the most athletic thing that he could think of. And when you put him into a pure athletic circle, there were few human beings in the world like him.
Yeah, and it's funny because we'll hear from Jerome here in a bit, Paul. But he says, he's like, well, I'm a jumper. Everyone who knows me knew I liked to jump, and clearly he says it wasn't premeditated. I have to believe him. I even going back and rereading some of the stuff from in the moment. Nothing about it said that but you can see as he's kind of shuffle steps. Like you see, he's getting ready to jump. Like, he was going to jump. And it just happened that the Darrell Washington, through the convergence of events there, led to the flip. And then, of course, as everyone knows, I don't think we're talking about this if he doesn't stick it, you know. And
that is it. It's not – people have gone airborne before. It's once you get hit in the air and start going that direction, having the ability – to get yourself turned around, land it, and then, of course, you got to play to the crowd and throw your arms up in the air. Like, look at what I did. That's the unbelievable. That is the true impossibility of this. Anyone can jump and get turned. But to then go complete cat, and just get right to the feet was one of the most incredible. I mean, it's definitely the most incredible thing athletically I've ever seen in person. At a sport, in all my years in sports,
I don't think we will. I mean, because you mentioned Gio's front flip before. I think Antonio Brown tried a front flip, but again, it's the context of it. It's in gameplay, and let's face it, again, it's sticking the landing. It is, unless there's a Montana to Taylor moment or something, or a Hester moment or something like that in the Super Bowl, Paul. There's, in terms of Bengals plays, which is funny because, it's only number two. In terms of just like the highlight, you know what I mean? Like, this will always be there because it's just so ridiculous looking.
It is. It's the way that it looks because you take the impossibility, the entertainment, and that's what gave it memorable. It was the impossibility is what made it memorable. It had no impact on anything.
Exactly.
It was an Anki. It was a throwaway play in a game against Arizona towards the end of the 11th season.
Right.
I mean, it was memorable because of its impossibility and the energy. So that's why it landed where it did. Because you just can't even. Anyway, so that was a great play. Let's bring in your conversation with Jerome Simpson, who, you know, we don't hear from very often. And we didn't hear from very often back in those days. I still remember him being a little kind of bitter at, oh, now everyone wants to talk to me. After this game, as the huge media throng surrounded him to talk about the play, he was kind of a little prickly about the fact that all of a sudden everybody wanted a piece of him when I think he had taken on some heat, during his whole career for never playing. Until that season, but there was a little bit of residual of that. So anyway, here's Jim's conversation with Jerome Simpson.
It's just a blessing too, yeah. So the flip, it definitely did a lot for me, especially opened up opportunities. And yeah, a lot of times it does. People do recognize me as Jerome Simpson as the flip. So yeah, it definitely was a blessing.
Yeah. Hey man, like I talked to Jeff Blake the other day, and because his sort of deep ball was something that he's like, wow, like it's cool that people, it's a positive thing that people can look back at my career as something I was a part of, and I guess you look at it that way, that it's like you played for a couple different teams, but at the end of the day, it's this sort of positive fun thing that people can see. I mean, NFL Network still plays it, like intro packages, you know what I mean?
Yeah, man, it's just awesome, man. Especially like, I know I have kids now, and just being them to see that, you know, their dad, you know, he's stamped in there, you know, is a great place of, you know, in football right now. You know, somebody really, really has pulled it off, like I did it. And, so, man, yeah, it's definitely a great experience to have, you know, just keep replaying it, and, you know, people say it's part of history now, and, you know, nobody's going to ever be able to do it like that. So, I mean, somebody probably will get close to doing it like that, but, I mean, you know, you gotta land on your feet.
Right. There was actually there's actually some guy, I don't know if you've seen this, I mean, you know, it's all over YouTube, of course, and there was some guy who tried to, like, imitate it on Madden, and it took him, like, 100 tries.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I've seen a lot of remakes of it, but none is in the fashion that I did it. Yes. Right.
Well, yeah. Now that time has gone. Well, first of all, do you recall the actual play call? Like what? Yeah. So what did Andy call in the huddle for?
At the time, it was X drag. I believe AJ had a extra. It was X drag, and then I think AJ and the other guys, they had goals or something like that across. Yeah, but I know it was an X drag play, and yeah, everything was cleared out for me, and I just came from underneath and just ran, and I seen Darrell Washington trying to tackle me, and I just jumped over him. You know, I just used my natural ability, and I mean, I replay the play all the time. I mean, I actually do look at it too sometimes. Okay. You know, just I mean, that's no lie. Yeah, I do. I actually look at it sometimes, time. It's just like, I don't know what I was thinking, but I was trying to score there.
Well, that's actually what I was about to ask, because obviously you catch it in space, you turn up field, and I'm just watching your foot action. I'm like, okay, wow. Like at about like the six, the five, he's kind of shuffling. It looks like the jump was planned. But so you know what? So after that was everything else just sort of,
natural instinct. It was just natural. I mean, to tell you, I've always been a jumper. I mean, if you ask anybody throughout my career that watched me play, is from high school to, I mean, Pop Warner League. If what's one thing that you know, Lane, that you know about Jerome, oh, he's a jumper. He's a jumper. And that's all. I mean, I've been doing it my whole life. That's what made me who I was, you know. That's what I knew, that my advantage over everybody was is that I was a great jumper. I was a great jumper, you know, and a great athletic ability. And so I've always used that in my game. And that's what just came natural for me is to jump. And my momentum just kind of just propelled me into a flip. And it was just my day to, and it wanted me, I mean, whatever it was, you know, I got whatever. They just wanted me to land that flip and make a name so I can just keep talking about it like this right here for years to come. And, you know, it's helped me out a lot, yeah.
Right. Well, it's so funny because you said, "Hey, you got to stick it. It's you got to land on your feet." And I think that's probably, you know, because people see football players go airborne, you know, like contact guys will tumble. What is? I mean, first of all, I guess had you ever done a front flip or front handspring to land it before, or what was? Because the landing is probably what the most important, impressive thing was.
Yeah, it was. I've jumped over guys, you know, but it's never been a flip that like that in that fashion. It was never a flip in that fashion that I pulled that off. You know, that was kind of a one of one there.
Right. Because you know, it's funny because I talked to. Do you remember that ESPN show was like Sports Science where they would like?
Yeah.
Okay. So the woman behind that, she's a doctor at USC, and she's. Studies like biomechanics and things, and she's like, you know, obviously athletes, you know, if their bodies are trained in such a way, you could probably put them in different fields and they'd be good at it. Like, you know, a football player could dunk a basketball, or a golfer could hit a baseball, or, you know, that type of thing. But she said like, the idea that he could keep his balance, but also know, like, don't land out of bounds. Don't put your hand out of bounds. So was that all a blur? I mean, in real speed, it's like instant. You know what I mean?
So like, I mean, it's no planning. No planning. It's just going out there and being an athlete and making a play and doing whatever it is to help your team win. At that time, I'm pretty sure that we were in a fight for a playoff spot that year. And I had numerous things going on, man. I just wanted to win for my team, you know, for Cincinnati, man, because, you know, it was a great place, man. I miss Cincinnati, you know, I'm not going to lie. But, yeah, I just wanted to do anything to help that team win, and, you know, that's what I was trying to do.
Right. So now, did you ever run across Daryl again, or because obviously he's part of this too, that, you know, in a weird way?
No, I have not got okay. to run across him. I've got to talk to him.
And I guess just finally, so you mentioned your camp. I think I've seen that you're doing some clothing design, some things like that. So what are you up to? If Bengals fans read this and catch up, what are you up to? What do you kind of want to put out there?
Yeah, man. So, okay. All right. So, yeah, I run a print shop here back in my hometown now. I'm also doing training with the youth, giving them the knowledge and skills that I've gained over the years. My company is called J Simpsos. Our brand is J Simpsos, so it's, you know, J-S-I-M-P-S-O, apostrophe S, custom apparel. And then we have our Pro Dreams with the Z brand that we do. And so, man, we can do a lot of stuff here. We do screen printing, embroidery, sublimation printing, direct to garment printing, vinyl. So we can pretty much do everything up under the sun.
Awesome. Well, I will make sure to. And is that jsimpsodesigns.com?
Jsimpsos. Yeah, but our email will be jsimpsodesigns with the Z. Yes.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah. So yeah.
Well, I'll make sure. We'll make sure that we get that out there as well. So if people want to find you, or even if it's down the line and more people in your hometown or around you, you know, to reach out to you.
I appreciate that, man. Yeah, that'll help out a lot. Yeah, definitely will. Yeah, definitely help out. Awesome. Yeah, man. But that's Jerome Simpson now, man. Just, you know, passing my knowledge on, you know, just staying in shape and running around, raising my kids, and you know, just doing what I've always done. Is just always trying to help people and you know, and just make somebody's day.
Okay, so that's our 5-4-3-2-1 coming next week. Again, I'm sure many of you already know what that will be, but I think you'll be surprised at how it's presented. And I think it's a really interesting and cool way that it will be presented when we drop number one next week. Come back for that. Keep an eye out for our big story and videos on the number one play next week. All right, let's get into the honorable mentions and those that just missed the cut. So I have a group of five-ish here that were sort of like just missed. Like it would be last four out, last five out, right? If this was the tournament. Somewhere, some combination. These are in no particular order, but some combination of these, and we can get into the debate of why they're out. Mohamed Sanu touchdown pass to Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
That was a fun one from a fun season, and Hugh Jackson's wizardry sort of happening. And the latest in the Mo Sanu is a quarterback legacy that is insane with his perfect passer rating. I would argue it was nowhere near the best throw that Mo Sanu's ever made. But with the quarterback catching the touchdown and breaking the tackle and the dive, it was very entertaining. And I think there was too much recency bias in that. We heard it from people, but it was mostly because it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, it's a hell of a play. You know, I mean, in terms of, you know, I almost wish we would have told Hugh Jackson it was in there just so we could get the actual play call.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean? That's been the fun part of this is if you go back and look, we actually have the play calls in there. You know, anytime you get trickeration, you know, you can win a Super Bowl or lose it if your quarterback drops it. You know what I mean? So, yeah, for sure. And well, you speak of recency bias in a way. I think the Vontaze Burfict interception of Landry Jones in 15 in the playoffs, that rated for a lot of people. You know,
really, you could look at that two ways. That and well, I would put it both. I think side by side with this should be AJ Green's touchdown from McCarron right before it. Like those.
Oh, you're bringing out McCarron guy.
I'm a McCarron guy. Look, it was McCarron moment. What do you want me to start talking about moments again? Because this was the one where they would have had the bronze statue up right now. They'd be like, no, we're not making a statue of Anthony Munoz. No, we're not putting anybody, but we're making a statue of AJ Green in the air over top of two Steelers, including Mike Mitchell, and scoring the touchdown to break the playoff curse, and AJ McCarron threw it. It was the reason that AJ McCarron guy exists was that throw. And that's why, because it was the moment. It was for Burfict to finish it off. You know, the arch enemy, the evil nemesis,
right?
Public enemy number one, to finish off the Steelers in that high intensity environment was why it was supposed to be special. Not on here, Jeremy Hill's fumble.
Yeah,
not seen, and the meltdown that happened, and that's just it. If they win that game, because then it becomes more impactful. It was impactful in its own way in that game. But if they win that game, one of those two is how high do you think? Let's just say right now, let's play out a different world.
Three.
If they win that game, how high is Burfict or AJ Green? Whichever one, I would probably put AJ above Burfict's interception personally.
I disagree with that just because that was a pretty, he caught, it was a pitch and catch. I mean, I think Burfict's, that was such an instinctual athletic play and all of the good things that you hear about that guy when he's in shape and into it and being dominant, and time of game and the clinching. I mean, think about how people would react differently with the whole runoff into the tunnel. That was supposed to be the walk-off.
That would be known as the Burfict Tunnel. Like, that's right. It would like have his face above it from that moment. You're exactly right.
So yeah, for me, I think that was more of a very special individual accomplishment rather than the pitch and catch to take the lead. Just the diving aspect
pitch
of it.
Pitch and catch. You're just trying to nudge at McCarron guy, aren't you? Pitch and catch. It wasn't a screen pass. It was a deep corner with multiple Steelers. It was the play that took the lead. I mean, their offense hadn't done anything all game. The defense had been good. And Burfict did it off of Landry Jones, not off of Ben Roethlisberger. That changes it, too.
Well, he also isn't he the one that knocked Ben Roethlisberger out?
I'm not talking how it wasn't Vontaze Burfict's shining moment game. I just feel like you're being a little, like, you just hate McCarron guy so much, you've let it cloud, I think, what that play really was in the context of that game and what it would have meant. But we're just torturing the living hell out of Bengals fans right now. Live in this world with us for 1 second where the worst moment in recent history didn't happen. No. So, Let's move on before, you know. So you think three. You think it would be at three in that.
Yeah, just because I don't see it. I mean, number one was number one, and I just – that individual sort of craziness. I mean, Jerome Simpson's flip is like 1B. You know what I mean?
So, we'd have had a pretty interesting debate about Simpson versus, let's just say, whatever play, perfect. I think we would have had a pretty interesting debate. And I'd have been curious to see what we would have heard from fans. If that had been the case. But guess what? It's not. They're 0-7 in the playoffs. All right, here we go. Terrence Newman's fumble return touchdown versus Green Bay in 13. So we get another 2013 showing up.
Yeah.
That was a fun season that ended in true disaster. Yeah. there was a lot of fun games. That was, you know, they beat the Patriots that year and snapped Tom Brady's streak of consecutive games with a touchdown pass. Then they beat Aaron Rodgers in the game where the Bengals went up 14-0, allowed 30 unanswered points, and then came back to win. And it was on a 4th-and-1 Jonathan Franklin run. And also, next thing you know, Terrence Newman is running off with the football.
Yeah.
Ball's out! As that was the call from Dave Lapham on that play. But anyway, it's not in the top five because it was strictly entertaining,
right?
And slightly memorable.
So yeah, and really, there's such a unlike the perfect play where at least in terms of I think why that would have been considered, he made that. I mean, Terrence Newman, right place, right time. You're picking up a loose ball off the ground. You know what I mean? And just kind of there's no – I mean, it was a great individual accomplishment to finish that off and to score. But, yeah, I think it was more of a memorable part of that.
Yeah. So after that, we get into Corey Dillon. You know, his long run to top off the game against Denver. But – That was sort of a game where they ran for over 400-plus yards. He wasn't the only one with a long run. Peter Warwick had a long run in that game. I mean, his game was incredible, but to pick one play from it was kind of hard. It was more about the totality of 278 than it was about one particular run. So I think that was the problem with – it seemed like one play from Corey Dillon's games needed to be involved, whether it was the rookie game or – the 278 game, but there really wasn't a specific play that was a shining example good enough to break into the top five, and that's kind of why I think he was left out. And the other one, you'd have had to pick your favorite Chad play. Like, something Chad needed to be in here, but we can hear from you if you're listening and you have opinions on what your number one Chad play would be that you would put over top of any of the top five. I'd love to hear it. We were thinking and going through all of them, but we never really heard enough from any of you about one specific play. Yeah. He has so many memorable catches and things he's said and done and impact he's made. but to find one play wasn't really there.
Right, right. I think, and yeah, it's sort of the, as you just said with Corey, Paul. I mean, you could probably pick out a game. You might remember a touchdown, but it seemed like it was more of a group effort with yes. Chad Johnson. You know what I mean? I think where Chad falls is if you were to debate, top five players, of all time in franchise history, that's kind of where those guys stick because it's the body of work stands out more. I mean, because they were just so consistently good and did so many great things and had those individual moments. But yeah, for this particular project, it was no one could find the one.
Yeah,
and who knows? Maybe that's part of it. Maybe that's why there's no there are no Lombardi Trophy victory formation kneel downs on this. No. You know what I mean?
No.
Because it's just like. There's a lot of great moments and big moments, but for some of these great players, look, there's no Boomer on this list.
No.
So it's just one of those things. Carson Palmer. Well, Carson Palmer kind of made honorable mention, but that was more for getting hit in the mouth by Geno.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Let's pick just out of all of the other – there was a lot, so we have a whole other list of everything else that was basically even mentioned. Give me one or two of your favorites from that giant category of other random things that you thought were interesting and that maybe could be talked about.
Well, I will go – I'll go with the conceptual one.
Yeah.
And that would have been Boomer's play fake.
Yeah.
It was just so good. And Tim McGee actually, after we talked about Jeff Blake, he asked me where did that rate? He wanted to know where the fans put Boomer's play fake. And just even over the years talking to others about it last year when we did the Bengals 50 stuff and just talking about Boomer skill set in general, it was so unique at the time. It was so well executed. He was so good at it. Obviously, it's a combination of things where, I think the line at that time was so huge. James Brooks and Nicky Woods, the run game was so good with Stanley Wilson that it was a perfect storm. But so I'm going to go conceptual there, Paul. I think of that next group of those sort of honorable mentions or nominations, some fans out, shout out to you fans. I didn't write down the usernames. But some of you guys did say, hey, that play, that concept was really memorable and really exciting to see how that would end up developing into whatever pass completion. So I'm going to go with that one because I thought it was a unique nomination or a unique play that didn't quite fit the rest of these, if that makes sense, but was still a very – it's a singular play, right? So it's just kind of an interesting thing.
So my two will be the fan stealing the football from Brett Favre and then getting destroyed near the goal line. I mean, memorable, yeah. Entertaining, oh hell yeah. Did it have any impact or anything like that? Or was it? It was kind of impossible to get on those. In this day and age, I think things would be different. And I say that. That wasn't that long ago, but it was. 2005, I guess. I mean. To get onto the field, to make it all the way down there and literally be right behind Brett Favre, that's pretty impossible. Perhaps we should have given this more credence when we really looked at it, right. That what this guy actually accomplished. Maybe it should have been up there at number three right after Jerome Simpson because of its entertainment value alone.
Right.
But it wasn't technically a play. It was technically a no play.
Right, yeah.
So who knows?
Yeah.
Also, I got to say, having seen it and understanding the history, if you really look at the history and the feelings at that time, Geno's sack of Carson, that was such a cathartic moment to watch because it was the rise up of this new team and Carson coming back to town, the team that he abandoned and quit on in the eyes of the organization, and to have their best player immediately in the first game just lift up and destroy to open that game was one that, I think is highly memorable for fans and certainly for those inside One Paul Brown Stadium. Those are kind of two of my most interesting ones.
Yeah, for sure. So it was a great list. Again, we appreciate everybody for kind of reaching out and you know, in all those various ways. This was a long time coming. So I think it's Mike Nair, just shout out to him, Sam Green, our photo staff too, for their help with the videos and production and stuff. Mark Canute about Peter Warwick and, you know, some really, really good stuff.
Mark Canute rises from the Bengals graveyard. You know, yeah. The Bengals thought he was gone, but he comes back talking about how special that was. It was great. Yeah, great to see Mark back talking Bengals again. I always love talking Bengals with him around the office. Of course, he does so much great work in the news side of our newsroom now, but I always love bringing up old Bengals stories and watching him get all fired up. So great to have him back on talking about that. All right. Well, we're out. We'll be back next week talking a little more about the number one play. So keep an eye out for that. And, of course, Mock Turtle Soup. Oh, you can almost taste Jim pushing it across the table towards me already. He's right around the corner. It'll be the 24th. So we'll have everything from there. Mike Brown, Marvin Lewis, Bill Lazor, Terrell Austin, Darren Simmons, all will be available at the media luncheon that day, and then we'll be going with training camp. So make sure you get it all locked in. The BBP is hanging with you. Thanks to everybody that sent in your ideas and suggestions and your best, your more of, less ofs that from last week's BBP, asking for your reaction to Moldus. I think it's going to do a lot of good to help us going forward to make this fit for you. And I want to say thank you, everyone, for all the good things and nice things you said about the podcast.
Yeah,
anything that was recommended as a suggestion was usually quickly followed by, but we love it. So whatever you do, we'll be happy with it. So, you know, we really love having you guys, all as listeners. And thanks so much for reaching out and being interactive. We want to make it yours. So we're going to keep trying to do that. Look for that as we get into the season, kind of molding this thing into what you guys want it to be most. So anyway, let's get out of here. Jim, you have a good vacation.
Thank you, my man.
And I will see you on the flip side when it's Mock Turtle Soup time. All right, we'll talk to you later.